can guess who's up next, because he's fiddling with all his cameras. So how long do I have to give an intro for, Colin? As long as I want. Well, I first met Colin. Colin's an interesting person. And he's an interesting person because I like to see him as a little bit of a project. I like to see him as a work in progress. Now, at the first Patriotic Alternative Conference, we dragged him there in jeans and a flannel shirt. Yet today, I have never seen Mr. Robertson looking so smart. And I think that deserves a round of applause. But I think we can say a little bit more for Colin. And that Colin is a man, is someone that before in my life, I might not have known, I might not have met. And initially, he seems very different to me. And he was very different to me because I think in many ways the system had a much greater grip of him than it ever had of me. And the system doesn't do good things to young men or to young women. It does terrible things to them. It turns them into lesser people. But Colin is someone who has managed to throw off the shackles of the system. And I've seen an incredible transformation from Colin over the last few years. And this transformation has accelerated and accelerated. He's become more confident. He's lost more weight. He's got smarter and smarter. And he's gone from being a man who was very much a victim of the system to being a man who is an absolute threat to the system. He's somebody that I said I might not really have known unless he came to nationalism. But he came to nationalism maybe as a little bit of a victim. But now he stands here as a hero. And he doesn't stand here as someone that I know casually. I'm proud to say he stands here as my friend. So please give him a warm welcome. Thank you.
Right. Well, thank you very much. It is actually ironic because I ended up choosing similar material for this speech. I want to encourage, I don't want to be too triumphalist about this. I'm only starting. I'm not pretending to be, you know, some ubermensch, dare I say the word. But clearly, yeah, especially in the last few months, I think things have changed, things have improved. And I want to sort of analyze why that was necessary in the first place, how I got to this point. I think there are many other men, especially younger men than me, who are at a similar point, and what can be done about it, because this always has to be constructive. Now, I just want to say, Jason, can you watch that camera, because it's going to stop recording every 30 minutes. That one is not working. So I'm going to need you to watch that and press the wee red button at the back. Can you see it? Wee red one? I mean, I'm not going to talk for that long, but it probably just happened once. Don't worry. When I pause. When I pause dramatically. Yeah. Can you see the button at the back? Right, okay. Okay, all right. Okay, so let's get started then. All right. We're going to start at a rather humorous point, what is a very serious issue. Ironically, given the degenerate culture in which they live and operate, millennials have considerably less sex than previous generations did in their 20s and 30s. Oh. What? Come on, this has to be for the channel.
Lucy, are you recording it?
Lucy, I am. I've got it.
You've got it? Okay. All right.
Lucy's rescuing us all.
I'll start again. Because it's going to lose the humor. Ironically, given the degenerate culture that they live with, millennials have considerably less sex than previous generations did in their 20s and 30s. Now, some people will be able to guess why this is, but here is an Austrian psychiatrist, Raphael Bonelli, to explain his theory. He believes it's happening because the sexes, men and women, have become too behaviorally similar to each other to attract each other. Men have become weak, passive, and self-doubting. Women have become assertive, tough, and career-orientated. The dimorphism, this natural sexual dimorphism, has been beaten out of them by the culture, so that they no longer possess the traits that attract the opposite sex. Therefore, ironically, the cultural Marxist gender ideology, that there are no genders and that men and women are the same and so on, actually begins to seem true to them because they feel similar to each other already. So they can believe that there's no real difference between men and women, that the distinctions are purely arbitrary, and even that male and female don't really exist because they are already similar. The woman is loath to submit, has never submitted, doesn't know how to submit, and is politically indoctrinated not to submit. So her modus operandi is to look for ways to break down her man whenever he tries to assert himself. Likewise, the modern millennial man doesn't know how to be dominant and believes that his desire to be dominant is unhealthy and evil. So his modus operandi is to look for ways to give in to her, to give her whatever she wants, and ultimately to negotiate the terms of his being dominated by her. One way this is resolved that I've seen in quite a few guys is that the guy becomes a kind of surrogate son to the woman. Her cheeky... It's tragic. Maybe some of you will recognize this syndrome. Maybe you know someone like this. The guy becomes a kind of surrogate son, a sort of cheeky son who winds her up and teases her. And she reprimands him. And this is not a harmless bit of teasing between partners, but rather a jokey way of handling the fact that the man is totally dominated. It's tragic to watch. Hold on a second, I just need a drink. It's a long time since I spoke to 200 people. All right. At a higher level, the tenor of society, the cultural fabric, is feminized. Our culture recommends comfort, luxury, sloth, consumerism. It recommends not struggle and hardship and victory, but harmony. And I think that men don't naturally seek harmony. I think that harmony is naturally of interest to women. But the ultimate harmony is nothingness. And this is why I think societies dominated by women never work and even sabotage themselves in order to bring about their extinction. Men are not supposed to pursue harmony as such. They are supposed to pursue function, success, discovery, invention, and expansion. And these things may lead to harmony, or they may not. For men, a longing for harmony is unhealthy, a symptom of either exhaustion or resignation. And we see how unhealthy this longing for harmony is, and also why it is unhealthy, in the example of young men who have not self-actualized, to use the modern phrase. Neets, in other words, not in employment, education, or training. Those who have failed to launch. The ones who are stuck at home playing video games, being hopeless and fearing the future, especially their own personal future. These unfulfilled young men regress to a childlike state, depending on their mother's approval and reassurance and presence. At a subconscious level, what the young man is longing for is the quiet harmony of being back in his mother's womb. No responsibilities, no dangers, no threats, no uncertainties, just sweet nothingness and safety. But that is a delusion. The fact is, the womb is not a place of perfect safety. A pregnant woman is vulnerable and relies on men to keep her safe. The baby inside her is extremely vulnerable because it has absolutely no way to defend itself and must rely entirely on the men around the woman protecting her and it. So that feeling of safety is an illusion and a dangerous one because it negates the reality that men always have to be building and expanding safety, security. When they don't do that, everything falls apart. The beautiful nothingness of the womb is actually the ominous possibility of anything befalling you at any moment and you having no defense against it at all. When you were in the womb, you were actually more vulnerable than you have been at any point since you escaped it. To long to return there is to be at war with your very nature as a man. Now, this is more relevant. Obviously, it's quite highfalutin, but it's more relevant than you might suppose. In the age of the welfare state, there's so much that could be said about that. In the age of the welfare state, young men don't have to build or expand or defend anything, including themselves. Therefore, even if the vast majority of them never have any perverse longing to be back in the womb, they do exist in a state of false safety and false harmony and false nothingness. The safety that the welfare state gives them relies on taxpayers. The harmony it creates is fictitious, and the nothingness that it makes of a young man's life is an affront to the very purpose of his existence. All of the same can also be said of modern globalized life in general. The safety we feel when enveloped in clean running water, electricity that never cuts out, an internet connection that never fails, is entirely fictitious. Because all of this relies on highly complex infrastructure that is built and maintained by men working hard all the time. This is a painfully obvious point, yet it's one that is very far from most people's minds from one day to the next. We feel safe, we get complacent, and therefore we don't pursue masculinity. The weak man seeks, and there are lots of weak men. I mean, the culture produces them by design. The weak man seeks the unconditional love of a mother. But this is tragic, because the romantic love of a woman is not unconditional. It's extremely conditional. It does not come for free, and it can cease. This is how it has to be, because women are supposed to require men to be successful, effective, and strong. As a woman, to get a guy, you just need to be attractive, supportive, sane, and not a bitch. Was that misogynistic? Was it misogynistic enough? But as a guy, to get a woman, you have to pass an array of tests. You have to be charismatic, intelligent, funny. I'm just going to read them off the page. Capable, easygoing, dominant, modest, arrogant, and a whole panoply of other requirements which will vary from one woman to the next, but generally be an equally extensive shopping list, no matter who she is. This is an evolutionary mechanism designed to facilitate eugenic breeding of the species. Therefore, when a woman is confronted by a weak man seeking unconditional love from her, she reacts with contempt because he doesn't realize that he has to deserve and earn her love. Again, the modern world does not prepare men for this fact and this challenge. The modern young man today does not understand that women expect masculinity, because he is explicitly told that women don't expect masculinity and don't need it and don't want it. But the fact is, they do want it, they do need it, and they do expect it, even if they don't realize it. But the young man of today doesn't know this. So he goes to her looking for some kind of unconditional love. And she responds with contempt, and he responds to that by getting angry, vengeful, resentful, confused, or simply insecure. Now, these are things that our ancestors knew in advance and protected against. So we should know better, and our culture should be better than this, but it seems to ignore these hazards and just sets people up for it. So I think, and this is a bit controversial, but I think that men can quite easily believe that women can give unconditional love because men can give unconditional love. I think men are naturally capable of putting up with so much shit and still loving the women. Usually, a woman will test a man before falling in love with them. Often, for a man, falling in love is almost instantaneous. He doesn't test the woman first. He has the image of her, the notion of her, and that is beguiling and enchanting and exciting and intoxicating. And so, even if she is a bit of a mess, he can love her and love her and love her. But of course, this doesn't mean it's right for the guy to put up with anything. A lot of mistreatment or disrespect or ambivalence from her, and of course, it should end. The point is, he needs to be in a position of strength so that he can end it. As long as he can't do that, the woman has the ultimate authority in the relationship. Again, this is stuff our ancestors knew. Women are the selectors. And what do healthy women select? They select the men who are strong enough to reject them. Unhealthy women select men who are too weak to reject them. These are women who want to retain that ultimate authority. By contrast, healthy women want to give up that authority. So they select for men who are fit enough to handle it. But this delicate dynamic has been completely disrupted in the last 50 years by the arrival of the welfare state. The state today, and this is a common enough thing, I think we all know this, the state today replaces men so that women can at any time retrieve that ultimate authority and dump the man that they're with. So the modern woman doesn't need to select for quality anymore, whether she's a down-and-out chav or a middle-class career woman. It doesn't matter. And she doesn't need to submit, and she doesn't need to learn to submit. For the same reasons, men no longer need to become the kind of men who can dominate. Their women don't really need them. The welfare state takes care of things. Of course, the harsh reality, as I said earlier, is that the welfare state is propped up entirely by men, and so indirectly, men are still needed by their women, just not in a way that leads to any rewards for them or to any healthy dynamic between the sexes. All right. Now, we're at the stage now where white women are, I don't know when this started, in the last few years, and maybe in 5 years at the most, white women are now getting a lot of flack, a lot of demonization from various interest groups, people of color interest groups. And it's interesting to see, I mean, well, I don't need to go into, I think we all know examples of this happening where they suddenly reject the white bitch and say that they don't need her and so on, and it's a bit of a shock. Anyway, it's interesting to see this taking hold and the effect that it's having on quite a few white women, especially young white women. However, this demonizing of them, white female tears and so on. It is a new development. The demonization of white men has been going on for a lot longer. I remember picking up on it as a small boy in the late 80s, but I think it dates back to at least the 1960s. Back then, white men were demonized not so much on racial issues, although those were certainly going on, but more on gender issues. They were demonized for not being good enough to white women. Feminism. Feminism served two purposes. First, it ruptured the bond between white men and white women. The women were encouraged to betray their men at a socio-political level. And this prepared the ground for much more overt demonizing of white men later on in the 2000s and beyond, where the women would be instrumental. The other purpose that feminism served was to simply begin the attack on white men as a collective. It set the tone. Feminism habituated white men to being attacked and to accepting the attack. And it habituated white women to taking part in the attack. The consequences of this were probably devastating from the very start. We talk a lot now about the wildly insane extremes of contemporary feminism. But I think that even the milquetoast second wave feminism of the 70s was enough to do very serious damage to society. And I say this because it did very serious damage to me, personally. Now, at this point, this speech is going to get extremely personal. I wasn't sure whether to do this. I do have a history of being very direct and honest on my channel. Sometimes it's detrimental, sometimes it's TMI. But I think in this case it's worth it because a lot of young men who are in the audience and who will watch the video later on will identify with some of what I say. And also it will serve to show just how much damage can be wrought by just a little bit of anti-male indoctrination. My mother. It would, of course, go back to the mother, as it often does. My mother was a student in the early 70s, and she imbibed 70s feminism. She was never a feminist activist. She just attended one march and decided it was too wild for her, and she never attended anything else. It's crucial that she wasn't actively a feminist, because it shows how deep the indoctrination goes. A few words here and there, a few ideas introduced into the mind of a naive 18-year-old girl, and the damage can last decades and multiple generations. So, she imbibed second-wave feminism. She was told, and she believed, and she would go on to quite frequently say that men are basically a bit stupid. They're aggressive, they're insecure, they're angry, they're destructive, they're vengeful, they lack self-understanding, they have a tendency to behave like blind animals. Unfortunately, 20 years later, when she had a 7-year-old son, something happened which seemed to prove correct all of these accusations about men, at least in the eyes of that 7-year-old boy. This event occurred, and I concluded from it that the little comments that my mother would occasionally make about men were all true. And from that point on, bear in mind that the culture, this was in the early 90s, the culture did facilitate this change in my head, because it is an extreme change that occurred. From that point on, I hated that I was destined to become a man. I hated it. I hated every aspect of it, every manifestation of it. It wasn't that I wanted to be a woman or to become a woman, as would probably befall such a boy today. I didn't want to be a woman. I just didn't want to be a man. So perhaps it's unsurprising that various things happened in my adolescence which have made some people in this movement dislike me very much. so much that they downvote even my best videos. But I don't think it was surprising. I didn't want to be a man. If I had to be a man, then I didn't want to be a normal man. I wanted to be anything else. Among other long-term effects of this was the fact that I didn't respect self-sufficiency. I thought it was delusional, because my mother had told me that self-sufficiency is a delusion of silly, insecure men. So I never pursued self-sufficiency, self-improvement, fitness, etc. At the same time, I absorbed her female tendency to rely on other people for help, her womanly helplessness. I emulated it. Eventually, this was all I knew to do, was whenever a major problem came up, one that was major enough to scare me, I wouldn't try to solve it myself. I would look to other people for help. And this, in turn, developed into a lack of proactive attitude and thinking. I learned to just hope for the best. And when that failed, as of course it would, and when just hoping for the best failed again and again in my early adulthood, I learned the lesson that I am not for this world, because disaster and pain and weakness and sorrow attend me, and that I am doomed to these things, that woe literally is me. This wasn't conscious self-pity. It was self-pity arrived at through a chain of psychological causes and effects, dating back to my 7-year-old self drawing the wrong conclusions about something. And drawing that wrong conclusion because of my mother's bullshit feminism, which she had imbibed 20 years earlier, and she wasn't even an activist. So, have another drink. Here and there, in my 20s, well, before that, here and there along the way, masculinity would attempt to emerge because I am male. That's what's going to happen. And now and then it would happen. When I was bullied at 14, I lost my temper and nearly beat up the boy, but I held back. Because of course I held back. Because fighting is uncivilized, and it's what men do. When I was 18, I fell in love with a girl for the first time, and I wanted to protect her, but I didn't know how. When I was 22, suddenly the desire to become a father emerged out of nowhere for the first time, and I'd never felt that before. But things didn't go as they should have gone. In fact, at that crucial point, 23, I returned home to my dad's house, and my descent continued until 8 years later I created my YouTube channel. Then, at the age of 33, I fell in love with another woman, and it was reciprocal, and there was tremendous potential. We loved each other, we were fascinated by each other, but then I got doxxed, and my life was thrown into chaos, and I was in a bad way, and she needed a man to be her rock, as I would now say almost every woman does, but I couldn't do it. Partly because my life was a mess, but mostly because I had never learned how to control my emotions. And then almost the exact same thing happened again 2 years later. And that was the last one. But this is all because at seven years old, I decided I wanted to be anything but a man. And now, at 37... I find myself needing to be a man because there is nothing else I can be and nothing else that I should be. So that's my personal story over, or at least the depressing part of it. I'm now going to say depressing things about society in general. But there, don't worry, the ending will be a wonderful upbeat flourish. All right. Okay. So, it's okay, thank you. Thank you. Okay, so men are demonized. Masculinity is ridiculed. The concept of toxic masculinity abounds. The mistake a lot of us made was to hope that things would change somehow before we really got into this stuff. But of course, they will never change, not of their own accord, because this situation is exactly what the powers that be want. I believe that masculinity is under attack because we as white men are under attack. And we as white men are under attack because our race is under attack. That is to say, in no uncertain terms, that the European race has been targeted for extinction. And that extinction has been engineered to play out in a very clever and subtle and insidious way. Everything else that we nationalists complain about, feminism, multiculturalism, Islamification, gay marriage, trans rights, etc., these are not ends in themselves. None of these things is desired by the powers that be for its own sake. Their end goal is our extinction, and they pursue each of these policies because doing so brings them closer to their end goal. For example, gay marriage is happening. Is that camera okay? Oh, okay. Moody wee thing. Okay, gay marriage is happening, not for the benefit of gay people or the improvement of society at large, but to corrode the role of the man in our society. Trans rights corrodes the concept of man in our society. Islam supplants white people in their own society, but also gives white women a more masculine alternative in the shape of Muslim men to the feminized white man, which in turn demoralizes the white man further. Multiculturalism supplants our culture whilst demonizing it for having been dominant in the past, which thwarts us in trying to restore it so that it can in turn restore us. All of these factors are in play in order to work against us as white men. So many things that we could once have relied on are now being denied to us or reshaped to work against us. It's a bad situation. And the result of it from day to day is white men who are weak, depressed, aimless, pessimistic, and some of them are very lost. But here's the thing. I was told of this quote, apparently the last Muslim leader of Spain, just as he was fleeing to North Africa, was admonished by his mother, ironically enough, who said to him, "Why do you weep like a woman for what you have failed to defend like a man?" The fact is, it is up to men to put things right. This is why masculinity is demonized in our civilization. If you can keep the men emasculated, you can prevent them from ever putting things right. That is the situation that we men of Europe are in. Asking our women to show us mercy, as so many men do, sort of natural, understandable reaction to the contempt that they often display, asking our women to show us mercy is futile. They are not supposed to show us mercy. Showing us mercy would be to let us off the hook. It would be to forgive and tacitly condone weakness. Therefore, it is in fact essential for society that they don't let weak men off the hook. Ever. Now, for us men, this lack of forgiveness seems incredible, ruthless, heartless, cold, but it is a survival mechanism for the women and for our group. And I don't believe, as bad as the situation is, I don't believe that we are genetically weaker than our forefathers. I don't believe that our condition is hopeless. And I don't believe that our women are going to change unless we change. So the answer to the impotence that a lot of men feel in our current society is not to appeal for mercy from the powers that be, and it's not to ask women to respect us in our weakened state. Society is not going to come rushing to our aid and rehabilitate us. and our women aren't going to respect us, admire us, or have faith in us to protect them or to save our society if we can't even sort ourselves out. I don't know whether God helps those who help themselves, but I think that women probably do. And they will join us, I think, once they see that we are worth joining. So the answer for us men is to rehabilitate ourselves. That means honing our humanity in various ways, but specifically honing our masculinity. Okay. Now I started my YouTube channel 6 years ago, mostly out of desperation at the time. The world was ill, and I knew that acutely. And also, I personally was ill with depression, self-doubt, despair, etc. My channel definitely served as therapy for me for at least the first two years, really. And for many other people as well. I have continued to focus on the dark side of life. That's what interests me. To the point where some people have accused me of wanting to keep my audience depressed. But that was never, ever my intention. People have also accused me of not wanting to get better myself. They've lost patience with me and so on here and there. Because for several years, I haven't taken certain steps to improve my condition. And I actually began taking those steps a few months ago. Well, really longer ago than that, but especially as from a few months ago. By swimming regularly, changing my diet, and various other things. Now, I already feel that things are different. I feel better, I feel stronger. My attitude is more positive, more constructive. And people watching my Sunday AMAs are saying that I'm losing weight by the week and that I seem more confident every week, which is just sort of incredible. But if other people are seeing it, then I imagine that it must be true. So throughout this year, this process is going to continue. I will be changing all sorts of habits that have built up over the years, mental habits mostly, some of which were seeded by childhood experiences, some of which were seeded by failure to launch in my early 20s. Now, I am not asking, in spite of Mark's very generous introduction, I'm not asking for encouragement or praise in this. I simply want to do as much good as I possibly can in the world. It really is as simple as that. And in the near future, that means the following. I want to function as an example to other men, mostly younger than me, but also of my age, and perhaps older as well, of what can be achieved, how much a single individual can transform. So, for the male, for the man, there is some overriding desires, I think, to be known, understood, and taken seriously, respected. For the woman, the desire to be loved and to have children and to be thought well of. These desires propel us as people. But we as people will be remembered, the vast majority of us, not for our personalities, nor our foibles, nor our endearing weaknesses, nor even our impressive strengths. We will be remembered for what we do, for the mark that we leave on the world. In the Withnell speech in 2017, I said, paraphrasing, "It is your gifts that matter, not you so much. You are a vessel containing your gifts, and you, the vessel, can be faulty, can be damaged, can be insecure, can be misguided by a poisonous age. But crucially, you, the vessel, can be repaired. And in the end, if you have honed your gifts, brought them to maximum effectiveness, and given them to the world, then I think you probably are a success of a human being." Thank you.
I think we can all agree that was an excellent speech. It takes quite a big person to be able to get up and speak to a room of nearly 200 people. But it takes an even bigger person to get up and speak to a room of nearly 200 people when talking about such personal issues. And that shows great fortitude and strength. And I think that speech was not only amusing, but very touching. And I hope that when that is uploaded to YouTube, that many young men watch that speech and use it as some form of inspiration so they too can start on their journey of self-improvement.